Hello, everybody. This is the Dulcimer Geek Podcast. I'm Dan Landrum.
I'm Aaron O'Rourke.
I'm Steven Seifert.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey.
So we had an assignment this week to work on a song idea that Steve came up with last week on the spot. We put him on the spot. Yeah, so, you know, that modified just a little bit over the course of when you were trying it.
Yeah.
And it's okay. This sounds like I'm making an excuse to begin with, but I felt comfortable when I looked at it just saying, here's what I'm hearing. And I suspect that all three of us are going to have slightly different variations on that melody. And I added some to it. How about you guys?
Cool. Yeah, I didn't come out with a fully fleshed out melody myself, or just a fully fleshed out arrangement of the tune, but there were a few variations on that melody that I really liked a lot that I would like to try and put together in a way that makes sense. And I'd be glad to throw them at you guys.
And Steve, how about you? And let's, I know you didn't look at it just like your situation.
Hey,
was
what about me? So,
yeah, what about you? I looked at it last night. I think that's what you did too.
No. And I'm not being trying to be funny here. What I typically would do in this situation where I haven't looked at it at all is, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, is I will quickly think, how can I do this right now to create some good music in a way that nobody suspects I didn't work on it at all? So that's kind of where I'm at this morning.
Interesting. Mine ended up being a waltz.
That's kind of nice.
I wouldn't say mine's a waltz, but it is in three.
And so I'm not hesitating to play for any other reason other than once we start putting out there what we did, then it can't help, especially in Steve's situation, but influence the way he's going to play it because he sort of doesn't have a solid idea in mind.
Huh. Oh, I have a solid idea. It's just...
Okay, gotcha. You didn't practice it at all? I'm not trying to put you on the spot and be mean, but not at all, even this morning?
Not at all.
Okay. When you guys are trying to teach someone how to practice, there's a moment early on in whatever it is I'm working on where I'm struggling with it, and I think, I wish I could show people this right now. But I'm mildly embarrassed to show people how much I struggle with things.
Oh, really?
And so then I practice it for a bit, and then I try to show the areas that were problems for me and hope that someone else relates to that. Hmm. Often thinking that the smarter thing to do would be to say, I'm going to start learning this thing right now that I've never done before. I'd like for you to see this process. But it takes a long time, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, depending on what it is.
There's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy who regularly posts his warm-ups and workouts and practice routines and all that kind of stuff. And
How long are they?
I don't know that. And I don't know if they're all the same. But some people are like, hey, you're giving your secrets away or you're revealing your weaknesses or whatever. And he said, look, you know, half of the people that watch this are going to be discouraged and won't even be interested, one or the other. Some people are going to be better than me because of this. And that's going to pay off as far as the community goes. So I'm not worried about that.
Boy, I like that attitude.
Yeah.
Man, I love that. I love that. This idea that you got to hide something about yourself. It's just crazy. It's crazy. I just don't, I guess I understand in business, like if you, you know, had a new product, you want to keep it secret. But I think,
or
that,
maybe if you're selling a car to somebody, and not to pick on somebody who sells cars, because we need people to do that. But you don't want to go out and if there's somebody looking at this car and say, you know, that's really not a very good car compared to this other one, I guess.
Well,
maybe you do. I don't know.
My secret is that And there's many negative aspects to this. I could give you a long list. I definitely prepare and work on things, but I regularly, ever since I was a little kid, I've regularly underprepared and had to show up and fake it. And I've developed strategies to fake it in a way that work. Now, I'm sure you can look at my performance and say, well, dude, if you had put in more time or if you'd done this or that, it would have been better for all of us. I agree with that. I'm just telling you what my history has been. And I'm not entirely proud of it. But at the same time, I do see that that faking it and coming up with strategies and tactics to do that, that has led to a number of good things for me, too. It really is a mixed blessing.
Parenthetically, watch how I'm about to deflect so it doesn't seem like I'm talking about Steve specifically. Close parentheses.
You're insane.
What are we doing? Are we possibly limiting ourselves, though, when we do that? I agree that we can learn things from being able to perform on the spot like a monkey, you know, dance, monkey, dance kind of thing. But are we limiting ourselves from better things that we could be learning?
Well, sure, I think. But I don't know what the end sum would be. I don't know. But I think I've lost out on a lot of good opportunities. I don't know.
I would kind of like to revisit this subject after we play a little bit and see what we came up with.
I think he's right.
Okay, let's try it. The melody that I came away with is this. You ready? Mm-hmm. So this is going to take about a minute or two. So hold your comments if you don't mind. And unless I mess up, and then I'll probably make some comments I wish I hadn't made. So I'm moving the microphone away from me now. Here we go.
Nice.
All right. So, thoughts?
I'm too busy getting ready for mine by tabbing out various possibilities.
You weren't even listening.
That
was your idea.
That's
that
hilarious.
I thoughtfully spent time last night, recorded, got up this morning, and practiced again, made changes.
I don't believe you did that much work on it.
All of that in order to hear Steve say something like, wow, man, that was thoughtful.
How much did you work on it?
Probably 40 minutes last night and 20 minutes this morning.
Well, if you did truly
do that,
that's impressive.
Good to not count on your friends for validation.
Yeah, that's true. I need to get over that quickly.
That's impressive.
I mean, I
depend
on
you really
did
that. But that's great.
No, I'm making it up. All right, who's next?
That was cool. So can you walk us through your process in that?
I could probably do it better now that I'm over the nervousness of learning something that quickly. And then, so the melody line that I picked out was...
No, I like that. That's cool.
So that's the basic melody line. And then
will you play that one more time? Okay. So that's the, yeah.
What?
That's a nice variant that I can see how what Steve did inspired that.
Oh, absolutely. That's
a, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would expect nothing less. I mean, this is not Dogma, you know?
Right. Nor is it Karma. But it, yeah. And then I like the idea of, I tried a bunch of things. The intro had this fun little, the sus4 coming in. Mm-hmm. I was working early on with some completely different chords where that intro made more sense, mm-hmm. actually fitted better. But when I ended up changing the chords that I wanted under the melody, I kept the intro because, I don't know, maybe because it unconsciously, subconsciously reminded me of Sending the Clowns. So who knows? Cool. Yeah, and then I wrote a B part because I don't think you had a B part.
Well, we didn't have anything like that. What's your B part?
Wait. Yeah. So, the other things that were going through my head, remember when we were playing with this last week? And I sort of jokingly made up a lyric.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this, I was making up lyrics the whole time I was writing it. I was thinking of phrases that fit with what I was working on. Now, I think this is an important part of the process. What I want to tell you now is I could tell you a story that goes with the song and make it more meaningful. And had I told that story to go with the song, it would have made it a little more emotionally hard for me to play it since I don't know it, because the song ended up reminding me of a Jack Johnson line where he talks about how new life makes losing old life better somehow. One goes out, one comes in. It's got a line in there, "I miss my old friend." Do you know the song?
Not off the top of my head.
And no. I can't remember the name of it. It's just a great piece of work. And I started thinking about my one of my old friends named Gibbs, who died, it's probably close to 10 years ago now, while I was working on this. And so it was almost, part of it was along the lines of thinking like a Shokin farewell or something that was, you know, sort of in memory of someone, but at the same time, happier because I have all this new joy in my life with grandchildren, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of how the whole thing goes. Now, having said all that, some of that's backfill because it doesn't necessarily work that way. You start working out by like, oh, I got to listen to, I probably spent 3 minutes, 2 minutes at the most, listening to what Steve did last week.
Okay.
So that was getting the technical part and then figuring out, okay, does it all need to be in D? Can it be in something else and trying other stuff? But then there was some point where I played the melody or some variation of the melody that I thought, oh, now my mind's starting to wander and that's interesting to me and the melody's sticking with me. Mm. And then I let my mind wander and try stuff. And that's when the backfill starts to happen.
I see.
Did you say backfill?
That actually reminds me.
Yeah, backfill. I think it's a good word. It's where you, humans have this, we have this tendency to, I might have mentioned this on the podcast before, but it's been replicated so many times. When you learn what parts of the brain stimulate other things, you can have someone in a room where you stimulate a part of their brain that makes them stand up. And they'll stimulate that part of the brain and they'll stand up immediately, say, "Why did you stand up?" And they always have an answer. "I was going to go across the room and get a drink of water." Or, "I left my hat in the other room." Because we want to have an answer and have a story that supports why we did stuff. that make sense?
Well, I think a different approach to that, that same thing, is something that Robert Force told me years ago with regard to writing songs, when he said something along the lines of, and I hope I'm not misquoting him terribly, but he said something along the lines of, you know, not every song has meaning when you write it. Sometimes you find meaning later that you associate it with, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Agreed.
And that sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about. Or in this case, it sounds like it was kind of in the middle of writing it. You didn't set off to write a song about your friend that you lost, but that's what happened in the middle of it.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's not really even about him. It's about that that feeling of old life and new life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it happens so fast that we don't have the ability sometimes, you know, a year from now, if I'm playing this song, if I've developed it into something, I'm probably going to tell it like I wrote this song about that. Because we know that the last time when we remember something, we're just remembering the last time we remembered it. And so stories get built, and that's the term backfill, Steve. It's like we dig a hole and then we fill it back in with something and that's what was always there.
I'm sorry again. I wasn't listening. I'm almost. No, really. No, Steve, haven't you guys been on stage? Or, you know, when you're in a stage situation, you got like 8 minutes and you actually make really good use of those 8 minutes before you have to do your thing.
Yeah, but none of your good use has ever been devoted to building relationships with your friends in those 8 minutes.
That's not entirely true.
Oh, what are you talking about?
I think Steve's just trying to follow up this week by when he plays a song, he can say, I wrote this 8 minutes ago.
Oh, that's awesome, and Aaron.
This song is called Amethyst Rising.
No. I'm greatly motivated by the fear that what you guys are doing is infinitely more interesting because of me, in a way that reveals a character flaw that has led to most of the tragedy in my life. And so what I'm doing here is, while you guys were talking about backwash, I was thinking of all the different ways I could do this.
So, Aaron, would you like to go next and be ignored by Steve?
No, I'm going to listen to Aaron a little bit.
Oh, thanks.
He's playing the same instrument. I'm a little concerned, you know.
Well, unlike Dan, I don't have a fleshed out arrangement.
Thank God.
It's not a song.
This is something you wrote a few minutes ago called Amethyst Rising.
I feel like the kid who did his homework and is sitting on the front row of the class and people are dissing him. It's like, yeah, because
no,
of
no,
that.
No, no, no. Let me. No, I did listen, Dan, and I like the waltz feel. I'd probably speed it up and get rid of the sus chords personally, but I might bring all that back in later. I mean, I liked what you did.
All right, thanks. I feel validated now.
And also, you stretched out something that I was thinking of in a very compressed way, and that. So as I was sitting here working out some ideas, I thought, well, I could stretch this thing out a little bit also, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, do it, Aaron.
All right.
This is so stressful.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Cool beans.
Okay. Yeah, I like that.
So
I definitely like how there's a number of times when you come back to that one, you know, that E, and it's just a real hook for me. It's that's starting to develop.
So there's a few things. I know we that Steve, you didn't do a B part last week, but you did sort of start to do something where you were alternating between these notes. Something like
Yeah, I like that.
So I just started messing around with those. And actually there's a part of me that wanted to play this in G because there's another possibility that came up. Let me slap the capo on real quick and play it for you. So I really liked this as a variation in alternating notes.
Yeah, that's nice.
Something along those lines, but
do that one more time.
Okay.
Do that again. What is that? That's awesome. Hey, that second half of that is something else.
So, yeah, I started messing around with that a little bit late, but it caught my ear. I like that major two chord in there, especially with what I remembered the simple melody as being, which was something like this. And again, I'm in G now. With that melody, the second chord I was going to in the A part. Was that major two chord, and bringing that in again in the B part just felt real nice. Going from the major two chord to the four chord is a movement that I really like a lot. And
what do you remember?
A lot of different ways.
What do you remember about the melody of the B part or whatever? What was that again?
All I remember you doing, you were again. This was back in the key of D.
Right. Do it in D.
Okay, I'll pop the capo off.
Just the simple idea.
Okay, so it's something like this.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all. Yeah.
Da 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 da. Da, da, da.
In alternating between those two notes, E, D, F sharp, D, there's a whole lot of harmonic possibility. Starting on the first fret, that E, I know that what will work harmonically there would be an A, an E, a C, if I wanted to, and all those are going to bring a different texture. So every time I land on that note, I might play a different chord, something like this.
Yeah, I like that.
But since I have the radius fretboard, my middle string is higher than all my other strings, so I like playing the melody there. So I'm playing that E on the fourth fret of the middle string and finding...
I've thought a lot of that.
In addition, I like the sound of the D, the high D drone, droning on the melody string. That's a texture I really like a lot. So
and
I find
I like
chordal possibilities there.
I liked you doing it in G, the second part. That was slick.
Good times. So
you know, honestly, if we all did this, if one week we had, I don't mean for the podcast, but if one week we had an idea and the second week we shared just our brainstorms on it, and then a third week was actually, let's make that become something, and maybe designate one person as the the leader or something. I don't know.
All right, Steve.
Steve.
All right, here we go. Yeah, so for me, that's like my first 10 minutes of trying to figure out, like, what are all the different kind of things I could do here? But clearly, gentlemen, I have not done my homework.
Yeah, but that reminded me of a song that somebody would be singing with, and it had this musical tale that sort of, a melodic tale that sort of followed it around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of intrigued with this idea, Aaron, turning that into a slip jig. I think that's got some possibilities. Something like that. I don't know. Huh.
Yeah, that has potential.
Whatever, you punk.
It's half of this is about just trying something and putting yourself out there.
Well, I don't know.
Well, I'll remember where this conversation went last time. I was trying to argue that you can write good stuff, and by you, I mean you, if you are listening and you have ears.
I think if you put the time in on it, and you just move forward, you'll end up with something. And if you don't just trash that, that something will turn into something else, or a little bit, or a lot, something else. And the feeling I had at the end of the last podcast was, I sure wish I put more time into this kind of thing. And I guess the fact that I didn't is you could call it a failure, but it's certainly representative of the way I operate, you know, musically. I don't know. You know what I hate to do is edit. Like when you write an article and then you have to edit it. I hate that. Hate that. Hate it.
You have to do it though. It's like pouring a glass of water and not drinking it.
Well, you can pay somebody else to edit, or you can choose to do things that don't require editing.
Does it matter if it's your own work that you're editing or someone else's?
Well, it all matters.
Okay, but do you prefer one over the other?
Do I prefer what?
Do you prefer one over the other?
What over the other? And what
editing your own work or editing someone else's?
I'd rather die than edit someone else's.
Okay, so a little column C there.
I don't know. I don't like editing my own. I could tell you that.
I want to know if you were kidding about that.
It's a character flaw, though.
But Steve, you and I have worked together successfully on multiple projects. And I see a trait in you that I think is true in me, that if the person you're working with puts an idea out there, you can take that idea and take it somewhere else.
I enjoy that, or just enjoying their other idea. I like that.
Well, but yeah, I think you have the ability to make it better. I've told you many times, I appreciate your opinion on multiple levels because I think you have good ideas. So I see you as an editor.
I don't know. I just started to get a little headache. But honestly, here's the thing. Hats off. Everybody gets a cookie today. Maybe I get half a cookie. I think Aaron... I don't know. I think this could all be turned into some bizarre musical about forest fires or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
How are your fires doing, by the way?
Oh, well, what is today? The 30th, November 30th, 2016.
Today's the 29th, right?
29th, is yeah. it? So all the fires are out around Signal Mountain and around Hamilton County. Unfortunately, though, there are actually buildings burning right now in downtown Gatlinburg.
I know. That's insane.
You guys, you know, as you're driving into town there on your left, there's Hillbilly Golf up on the left.
Well, I know where...
It's one of the older ones.
I know where Ripley's is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hillbilly Golf is gone. There
really?
Are people that... Yes, Hillbilly Golf is gone. There are the... North Chalet Hotel, I think, is gone.
What?
There's major fires going on right now. It's not a good situation.
Oh my! I'm looking at pictures. Ripley, wow.
Did Ripley's catch? I know they've had people sort of trapped.
Somebody
in there.
Told me it was near there. I'm looking at. I don't know what I'm looking at. This could be fires from the past, also. But
one of the art schools there. Near Hillbilly Golf. I'm trying to remember the name of the street. It's one that angles off right as you go into Gatlinburg. That's where most of the damage was as of this morning.
Oh, I'm looking at some crazy stuff right now. So we've got friends out there. You know, we've got Bill Taylor in Pigeon Forge. We've got Mike Klimmer.
Yeah, Mike, I saw Townsend. Mike posted that he's okay. The thing that happened with the fires is they were worried about Pigeon Forge yesterday, and then so they evacuated one end of it, and it got really smoky and sooty all around there. The fires moved last night, and then a little bit of rain came, which everybody's like, oh, cool, some rain. But then the winds really picked up and changed the direction of the fires and moved them towards Gatlinburg, towards that end of Gatlinburg. And so
they were describing that last night as worst possible conditions.
Yeah, 60 mile an hour winds.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, wow. Sorry to end this one on a negative note.
We still got 20 minutes.
Yeah. So that's tough situation. We need more rain.
You know, that's the thing. It's hard to. I don't know. Jeez, Pete.
All right. Thank you guys for participating in that thing.
Sorry, I said wildfire. Jeez, oh, Pete, I'm depressed. I'm hopeful. I'm an optimist. Come on now. Hey, seriously. Let's be optimistic.
Well, that helps, I guess. So,
man. Creating in spite of the darkness, you know, in your life. That's a whole nother topic. But what were you going to say,
Dan? Can we stay on that for a minute? Sort of goes with what I was going to say anyway. So there's people who are probably going to mostly hear this in the future. I am on the border of being mildly depressed right now because of I am a little bit, I'm about 2 weeks behind where I should be for the Dulcimer Players News magazine production.
There you go. The guy who puts out a magazine by himself almost.
And and I'm actually trying to train someone to help me with some of the layout, and that
thank God
seems like it has slowed it down just a little bit.
Of course,
Naturally. But you think that's going to be? Does it look like that's working out?
I think so.
Cool.
I think. I don't know. It's somebody local, and I've tried with friends. I mean, who are good folks and everything, but the distance makes it hard. Mm-hmm. So having somebody local where we can actually get together is probably going to help.
Yeah.
But that weighs heavily on my shoulders.
I mean, it does. Like,
this needs to be. I should be done with this. Sorry for being all personal about this, but it's no one gets hurt if a Dulcimer Players News magazine comes out 2 weeks late. So it's not like there's injury associated with this. But it means other things that I should be working on aren't getting worked on. Like at this time, Angie would like for me to be back at remodeling the house. And I was hoping as we jumped into December, Aaron and I would be recording. Mm-hmm. I said all that not to say, oh, feel sorry for me because it's my fault. So I'm not saying that.
No, we get it, dude.
No, you don't get it because I haven't told you yet.
No. We get this, just talking freely.
Working on this song last night was an oasis.
Oh, that's nice.
And I find that to be the case. Yeah. What music does when I'm working on music, that's the time in my life when time people say it stands still. That's not the case. It's just flying by and I don't notice. But for me, it seems like it's stopped, you know. Music is such an awesome, cool thing to have in your life, and I hope to always mm-hmm. have it.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Working on this song was a fun distraction in some ways. And that Dan, I know I've told you, Seaford, I don't know if you knew about this. I've been working on a partita for Mountain Dulcimer.
So cool.
And I've been writing the second movement.
What's a partita?
Like a suite for a solo instrument. At least as Bach applied the term, but the definition has evolved a bit. But that's how I'm applying it. A suite for a solo instrument, a multi-movement piece.
Is that what suite picking? Is that what we were talking about?
Yeah. Oh, yes, sweet. S-U-I-T-E picking. Yeah.
You want to hear the official definition, which is just validates what you said.
Okay, sweet. I love being validated.
A partita, also partia, or parthi, was originally the name for a single instrument piece of music in the 16th and 17th centuries. But Johann Koenu and his successor, Johann Sebastian Bach, used it for collections of musical pieces as a synonym for a dance suite. Bach wrote two sets of partitas for different instruments, those for solo keyboard. The composer published his Opus 1. And anyway, there's more.
I don't know what any of those words mean. Wow. It's my partite and I'll cry if I want to.
Well, I've been working on the second movement of this partita, and it's just writing it has been kicking my butt, and then learning how to play it has been even more brutal. And
I want to hear that.
About... it's made me think a lot about how in workshops, I think we've all heard some version of if we start off by demonstrating some technique, someone might say something along the lines of, well, yeah, you can do that, as if you have some sort of innate ability that,
oh, right.
that we don't, because they don't get to see what happens in the working it out process.
This is a good practicing. Picture.
And my wife has now had a front row seat to seeing several 10-hour days of practice for me, and what that has entailed. And I've been thinking, because I'm going to try and record it today.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited about the piece. I'm nervous about it. I've never been more nervous about recording a piece.
Wow.
But I'm gonna try and do it, and I'm gonna try and record a video of one solid take while I'm recording, knowing that that's probably not what gets used. But it
two camera angles is going to be your friend.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing video. Okay.
Yeah. But no, I'm going to record an MP3 of it
today.
Hope to edit it tomorrow. But working on this has been, even though it was still practice, it was still writing, it was still playing the dulcimer, it was kind of the break that I needed to make me, one, I was excited to work on it. I really enjoyed the themes that came out of what you put together, Steve. But it also made me more excited. Yeah. The notes that you put together. But it also made me more excited about returning to this thing that I was working on.
So listening to Aaron practice a section of it yesterday for a few minutes, I'm going to use the word Bela Fleck, and I'm not comparing him to Bela Fleck. That's not what I'm doing. I'm comparing it to the experience of seeing Bela Fleck in a nice theater where he has a banjo and he's playing an original piece or a Bach piece, and you've got your eyes closed and you're listening to it and you're just thinking, this is as good as it gets.
Well, that's what hear it this
sounded
thing.
Like hearing Aaron playing it yesterday. So
I want to hear it.
Well, I actually posted something on Facebook that was when I just had a little bit of it.
Okay.
And I started off by saying the piece is kicking my butt, but I'm excited about it. And nothing has really changed from that, except that the writing part of it is finished. But the playing part of it's still kicking my butt.
I'll tell you what's kicking my butt is it's December, and basically... And December is always a little rough, and I'm planning out my calendar for the next year, and I've got these new books I've been working on forever that I'd like to wrap up. And if I sit down to play some music, it's absolutely going to be... This is what pops in my mind, is I think of Ravi Shankar playing something slow, and I sit down with the dulcimer, and I just start making up stuff, and I almost feel like... It is a meditative kind of thing for me. It's almost like just easing into a warm bath or something. I just get into that space, and then my mind feels different. And sometimes I'll drift into working on stuff, but you know, more often than not, my trend has just been, let's maintain this kind of mental state that's so different than me standing around worrying or whatever.
So I have this idea, Steve, that, as you know, I'm interested in mindfulness, you know, the concept of mindfulness. And so I've kind of been studying it off and on for a year or two. And when you have a new music student, you know, and we all talk about the talent is overrated and the Malcolm Gladwell outliers concepts and all that kind of stuff, that there's that 10,000 hours concept that you have to bring to it. I think as far as being in a meditative state, that musicians have a lot of those hours of training to do that already in. And it's that exact experience that you're talking about. And so if you can learn what that looks and what that feels like, perhaps you could apply that same thing to something that you don't want to do. That's my goal. I'm not there.
That's my goal too. I mean... I listened to an interview with a celebrity that I never liked. Yeah. But when I heard this celebrity talk about their life, I was like, this is one of my favorite people. But she said that one thing she likes to do, she finds that some housework, doing her own housework, is very liberating. And she's always done her own housework. And I'm sitting there thinking, I hate housework. But she's saying, it's liberating. You know, and I'm 43. I want to change some things. But I have to start thinking of certain things. You know, maybe some things that I felt burdened by would actually liberate me. Absolutely. Especially in the greater context of community and everything. But this has been a constant thing my whole life. You know, I love to fake it. I don't think I fake it with people as far as talking to people, you know, but when it comes to a book report, or music, there's definitely preparation mixed in there, but there's just, I've always have this guilt about faking it, you know? And, but on the other hand, there's artists out there that I really like, and they're kind of doing the similar thing, so maybe I ought to figure out how to do less editing and really lean into the improv or something.
Be careful to delineate between faking it and imposter syndrome, because those are two different things.
I don't know the posture syndrome.
Imposter.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be something I'm not. But
no, it's the opposite. The imposter syndrome is where you have this nagging fear that you aren't what you are, and that people are going to figure it out.
You aren't what you are. You aren't what you are.
Right.
Like, you think you aren't what you are. Okay.
Right. Yeah. You worry that people are going to realize that you are just faking it, when in reality you actually may have become, you know, kind of a master at this thing.
I love faking it. Yeah.
But you never quite feel. And the good news is, you guys familiar with the Dunning-Kruger effect? Look that up. Just look that up. That's such a cool study. But
could you perhaps explain that in German?
I'm going to do it quickly. The very short version is, generally the people who are the most confident are probably the least informed. And as you move towards having greater information and knowing more about stuff, you're much more likely to doubt your conclusions. Well,
that's interesting.
And I think that also applies to the imposter effect, that...
Imposter,
like pretending.
Yeah.
Like you're pretending to be a musician. It's what you feel like. What even is a musician? I mean, if you had to define that.
Yeah.
I think the best thing out of this whole podcast is knowing that Aaron is going to record something really cool today, and I might get to hear it later.
I'll try not to let you down, Steve.
And
what's been kicking my butt musically,
yeah,
is this stuff that Aaron and I are working on for our CD. Mm-hmm. Some of it, this isn't about wanting to play fast, but some of it's not right unless it's really fast.
Right, yeah.
And we're finding that out. And by really fast, we mean like swinging at 230 beats per minute. And it's a different thing. It's like when you listen to... Donna Lee by Charlie Parker.
What does that mean, 230 beats?
Well, hold on. Let me pull up a metronome and I'll show you.
Well, I know what you mean. I was trying to hear it.
Well, so here's, let me grab some hammers. Do you see my hammers? I bet I carried them over to the desk.
No.
That's awesome. Oh.
They're in my pocket.
They're always in your pocket.
Ow!
Oh, yeah, okay. Watch out. I forgot to tell you, there's a microphone right in front of your face.
So, this sounds fast. But once you start actually playing this one song we're working on, that's really way too slow.
Mm-hmm.
Because it needs to swing like...
Yeah, I like that.
Now that sounds
But
really
that's around
slow.
120 or something, yeah. Right?
That sounds
So you're
really,
doubling it?
It sounds really, really slow right there.
Because mm-hmm.
once it gets actually into the line, it needs to be... it's hard. It's such hard work, and I'm recording myself over... I know Aaron was working on some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Record yourself over and over and over again and realizing... And being embarrassed by being a sloppy player.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can hear all these anomalies when you record it. So.
We always called it being on the Humilitron. Listening to yourself.
I love that.
Back solo. It's
I like that. The Humilitron.
Yeah.
That's
so
good.
Speaking for me and speaking for Aaron, and hopefully for you, we're using a metronome a lot.
Yes.
If you're not using a metronome, and you hate the metronome, it's not the metronome you hate. It's yourself. You hate yourself.
That's hard.
Wow. No, I don't mean that in a bad way. But the metronome, if it's always saying to you, I mean, it's so hard. I mean, you have to embrace it. It's part of your family. It's actually somebody that loves you and you love them and you need to give them your best. Somehow, you've got to get over this thing where you hate the metronome because it's always saying to you, you're wrong now, you're wrong now, you're wrong now. Just relax and be wrong and make adjustments and give it time, because when you get to a place where the metronome is where you start to feel that quality relationship with the metronome, you will be so thankful for what it brings to the table. Don't give up on the metronome, people.
Yeah, yeah. It's not something that you use to see if you've gotten good or not.
No. Yet.
It's something you use to make you good.
Yeah. Yeah, one and of my favorite memories helping out at a guitar store was a gentleman that came in and returned the metronome, swearing up and down it sped up and slowed down.
He for real?
Yeah, for real. He came in twice.
Wait a second. Was it a manual one, and did he live on a boat?
Yeah. Right. I didn't ask that. It could be. That's funny. No, a friend, he said, well, really, let me see it. And he played along with it, and he goes, well, it's not doing it right now. And he said, well, I'll go home and try it out again. And he came back and this time returned it.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I did a lesson a week or two ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. And here's what was funny. As she was playing with the metronome, I was just actually having her count out loud with it. I wanted her to be able to count to 2, 3, and 4 while the metronome was going on, with 1 being on the click, and we had it really slow. So it was like 1, 2, 1, 2, that kind of thing. She would speed up and slow down dramatically, so much so that it was kind of disorienting for her. But she was really discouraged by this. And I was trying to tell her, look, when I do the same exercise at the same tempo, I'm also speeding up and slowing down, but just on a much smaller level. And I was trying to tell her, you're not messed up. You're going through the same thing I am. And the more you do this, the less dramatic your speeding up and slowing down will get, I think.
Well, that exercise, when you play with a lot of space with a metronome, that's hard.
It is very hard.
Yeah. Did she try counting the and beats to fill in?
I would sometimes have her subdivide. And another thing I find strange for me is on a really slow thing like that, if I will just slowly move my upper body so that I'm not being still, and I'm not talking about oscillating to the rhythm either. Sometimes I take one hand in the air and I just slowly move it in like in a circle, and that helps. I really think the brain needs movement to measure time. But I do all kinds of exercises with people on a metronome, but I just think that sometimes when a student is discouraged, they don't realize, hey, you're right on track. You just need to keep doing this. You're making adjustments. You're hearing where you're off. You're hearing where it's good. You maybe sometimes aren't quite sure. That's the same for me, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm not arguing with you, Steve.
Okay.
Maybe it does, but maybe it doesn't.
Maybe what?
Maybe it doesn't need movement. Maybe you can become focused enough on tempo that the point where the tempo is taking place is the thing that's doing
movement. I don't believe it.
I want to interrupt here, and I just want to point out that not everyone knows this, but I think Steve's relationship to a metronome is really unlike anyone's I've ever seen before. We tested this years ago with bestdrumtrainer.com, staying in time.
Oh, is this the thing on my back porch?
Yes, at your old house. Yeah. And when Steve was the absolute most in time, I mean, totally nailed it when there were these big stretches of nothing keeping the beat. Was not when he was playing or clapping along. It's when he just screamed one note and shook his head wildly and then clapped, and he was right on the beat.
Was that luck?
You did it twice, and you were dead on both times. And that was without doing anything. It seemed to me to keep the beat. Your body was not moving in any way that made sense, but somehow you found the beat, and it seemed like a miracle.
Yeah, and I'm almost sure you and I both closed our eyes.
Yeah, I think you're right. Except when Steve was doing it, then I took out my phone and videoed.
That's true. Yeah. I wish you still had that.
I do, too. That was amazing.
Hey, what was that like website? I want to find that again.
I think it was Best Drum Trainer.
Best Drum Trainer?
.com. And it had the ability to start with a beat that had plenty, start with a, at a tempo with plenty of the beats filled in. And then over time, it took out more and more sections, you know? And so the anchors became more
I forgot
sparse.
About this. Yeah, because normally I use Time Guru on the Apple iPhone, and it randomly drops clicks so that you're forced to kind of do it on your own.
You know the coolest thing about the word guru? Guru.
Yeah. That's a lovely little addition. I talked to a neuroscientist once, and she didn't like my idea that the brain uses movement to measure time. But she didn't really have, she didn't bring up studies or anything to, I mean, and she knows more about a brain than I do.
Well, point about maybe the brain not using movement is that that's the way I'm agreeing with Aaron and you here. That's the way you've learned how to do time. So when you're in your zone and the synapses that are firing that give you an endorphin release because you did it right are all associated with a bunch of other stuff as well that might be able to be trained out, thus giving you an opportunity to be even better because your movement is more focused on accuracy. Now, not
that
on
could be,
affectation.
But I'll tell you, some of the best studio musicians are very conservative with their physical movement, or they choose to play things that don't have them leave their typical physical stasis or whatever. Some of the best studio musicians that have the best timing, they're not playing, to me, risky, interesting stuff.
Right.
It's a little bit tame.
I bet I could find some that are, though.
Do you think that the lack of body movement, though, has more to do with maintaining a relationship to the microphone in the studio?
There's some of that. But, you know, when you if you got a neat idea all of a sudden,
there's a
and you
lot
just,
of that.
If you just tried a new idea, and you're playing with a metronome, I'll notice that my timing wavers much more. My overall tempo, if I just like improvise some crazy new idea, because I haven't learned to pace the different muscle groups to maintain that tempo. So I think that some people tend to they go with the safer stuff because it keeps the tempo better. And maybe in the long run, they take those ideas and work them. I don't know.
The song idea that I did on the Hammer Dulcimer from your idea today was better when I practiced it because I did more risky things.
Yeah,
same here.
Maybe a lot of studio musicians aren't really doing risky things, but I know this is very general. Some of you who are listening who are famous studio musicians whose feelings are hurt right now,
they're not listening to this.
I apologize. You're awesome. But you should get a website because nobody knows your name.
Well, I know we all have work to do, and before we take off or leave the topic of playing with a metronome, I think it's worth mentioning this thing I'm going to record today. I can't record it to a click track. And that's one of the things that terrifies me.
Why not?
Because it needs to slow up. It needs to slow down and speed up.
Yeah, why can't he create a tempo map in Logic?
Because then he's doesn't have the opportunity to feel it at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't?
No.
You don't have the opportunity to what?
Yeah, I'm gonna say sorry.
Wait. What he does is he records a sloppy version, and he throws it into Logic on track one. It may be sloppy as far as the little licks and stuff, but he's feeling good about the tempo. So when you record that first one, you nail the tempo. Then you listen back, and you create a click track by you tapping, which you can do in Logic. And you can go back and line it up, and if something went right. And then you eventually end up with a decent click track that's fluid.
I want to make an argument completely against that. From having been in a professional band where we had to deal with that. If on an individual basis, sure, he can do that. So here's one point against it. But the 2 hours that it takes him to do that, because it takes a long time to do
it. He could get better at the song
and be more in touch with it. That's one. Two, if he's feeling it differently at the time, he doesn't have a choice. He has to be focusing on that. And three, if you're doing this for an entire band, you know, an orchestra or whatever, and it's got something that has some rubato sections in it, and you fake the rubato, and everyone in the band has to listen to that click track.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they can pull it off. Maybe they can. But what if the audience gets excited at a different point? And their heart races a little faster, and they really want to play this faster or play it more slowly because it didn't work with the audience. Rubato's magic.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
I hate playing live with a click track is what I'm saying.
What I find most interesting about Steve's feedback, though, Steve, is that when we were talking about composing, the place where you seem to be coming from was placing an emphasis on the ability and the opportunity to stay loose.
Right. No, yeah. I was just bragging that I had done that before in Logic, basically. Oh, okay. But I'll tell you, I think if I had to record you today, I would, without talking to you, I would think, hopefully I'll have him play through it 3 times. And then we'll go back and fix a few things he thought were trouble, and then he can go to lunch. I'll see if I can edit it or something, you know.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for being able to perform it in one take.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Totally. But there's – I think you should be there and then not make yourself do it.
I think that's great. Mm-hmm. You should prepare for no edits and then edit as needed.
Yeah.
Because it takes that to get you to the place where you can – speeding up and slowing down, that's not natural. You have to practice that. That's a learned skill.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I'm not going to get to talk to Dan for a while. Is that right?
Why? What happened?
Because you're so busy, and I don't talk to you anyway except the podcast.
I'm hoping to be completely done within 48 hours, but I got to put another – I've got a council thing tonight. Also, so it's just a busy time.
We got to talk about compressors and Logic. We'll do that later. I want to tell you this stuff.
Well, hey, why don't we do a geek show next time? Dulcimer Geek Podcast seems like a good place to do it, where we talk about these things. What is
things
compression?
We think are geeky and cool?
Yeah, what's compression? What's delay? What's a Fraunhofer display?
I love Fraunhofer's with real maple syrup.
They're a little spicy for me, the sage in them.
No, but we could totally, like Aaron, I just got this K&K twin spot internal pickup I want to try out and got a little preamp.
Oh, cool.
It's time for a geek show.
Let's geek out next time.
Nice.
All right.
I love you both much more than you think.
Huh.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, now, let me rephrase that. I like you guys a lot. I don't necessarily love you through sacrificial action, but I'm working on that.
Yeah, I'm glad you clarified that, because usually when someone says I love you, I just assume that's through sacrificial action.
Well, if it is through sacrificial action, I got a lot to do. Take Aaron first.